Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, we have Carlos Sainz, we have Ramsey, we have Tiger Woods, we have Shane Lowry. I could go on and on and on. We have the master. Actually, not sure we can say that because we had Al Ford.
Another master.
We have another master, Funk Master Flex from Mullingar. No bother. No bother. Conor Moore joins us from the Gar. He's coming in to have the chats. Really looking forward to that. I know Conor a little bit. Great guy. And average golfer. Champion golfer like
obviously
myself.
Obviously a golfer.
We're going to have to touch on that. Lifted a bit of a trophy with Conor back in the day. So any opportunity to talk about my golf game, we are going to do it.
Did he run any marathons, I wonder?
As usual. As usual, we'll be looking for all your questions at food@goloudnow.com. And apologies for my amateur co-host acting the maggot over jokes. There.
So, ingredient of the week this week, Gary. I love the way Gary always, before we come on air, he tries to get his ingredients in really quick just to try and throw me off. But what have we got this week, Gary?
Well, you see, I'm the only one that prepares for the show. So you say that thinking that it gives you more time to think on something because you don't do your homework. And then I come up with an ingredient and he's like, I don't believe it. I wanted to talk about eggs. But too bad, I'm going with eggs. I mean, is there really an ingredient that a kitchen could not do without more? I mean, butter, salt, seasoning, all of that there, water. But eggs, just an unbelievable, so unbelievably versatile, you know, from the savory and the sweet, you name it. Eggs are featured in so many dishes, so much stuff. And that's what I've gone with this week, you know. I mean, look, there's a million ways, I suppose, I could talk about eggs, Gareth. I mean, I'm more on the savory end like yourself. Like I like bacon and I like patisserie work. I mainly do that when I'm at home. On the professional setting, I've got pastry chefs and obviously you get involved in the pastry. But for the most part for me and in daily life at home, it's usually poaching them or frying them.
Probably one of the easiest ingredients to get wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like because temperature just has so much to play with them.
Way back in the 90s, there was a lot of gibber. And whenever Conor Gallagher was the big boy around town and Peacock Alley was open, and I'm not sure what chef it was in the world or if it was the executive of the Waldorf Astoria, but Conor used to make everybody cook me an egg. Like fry me an egg or do whatever, like just cook me an egg.
I still get commies to make an omelette on their truck.
Do you?
It just shows understanding of temperature control. So like if the pan is too hot, obviously that goes one way.
And you've got the colour in the omelette and any pro chef will tell you like it's all over, put it in the bin.
It's not hot enough then.
Go work in the Shelburne because you're not getting a job in the marker. Is that how it goes? Yeah.
That's exactly what I say.
So yeah, and you know, even Saturday Kitchen, there was only one of us on that show and you can all guess which one of us that was. But Saturday Kitchen,
the agent shouted louder. Yeah,
I think they used to do the omelette challenge, wasn't it? Like way back.
It was a disaster.
Oh, it was terrible. They actually,
awful.
They ruined what an omelette should be. You know what I mean? Like trying to make it in too much of a hurry. And
it was a bit of crack.
Jesus, some of them.
Famously, it was either Albert or Michel Roux went on and just took his time.
Yeah.
Took him like 1.5 minutes.
Yeah.
You're like, only he have the... He's everyone like, just stood there. Yeah. If he put up this perfect.
He didn't give a shit about winning the competition. He's like, have some respect for the egg. He did it right. And really, that perfect omelette where it's folded, it almost looks like a quenelle when you flip it over on itself. It's like a little silk pillow. You know that the very heart of it's going to be oozing a little bit. And yeah, geez, when you see the man, I mean, I've watched Marco make an omelette too up close and personal. And Jesus, he's like a ballet dancer with a spatula in his hand. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And I remember fondly my days of working breakfast. And like I just think any chef worth their salt should do a bit of time on breakfast because it teaches you such control of the stoves. And normally when you're on breakfast, you're nearly doing the pass as well. The pass is where, in a professional kitchen, is where the orders come in. And like if the hotel isn't full, you might be doing breakfast on your own. Certainly 6 to 7 o'clock. I mean, after 7 o'clock, more people start showing up. But being able to poach, scramble, fry, and then
in a hurry, and you can't really cook it. I mean, America taught me an awful lot about the perfect egg. You know, over easy, over medium, over hard, the whole nine yards. But you know, cooking an over easy egg, and there should be no bubble, no color, no nothing, and just start to finish. You know, too much oil, not enough oil. Do you do it in oil? Do you do it in butter? Do you do it in a combo? The whole nine yards. How do you eat yours, Gaz? What's your preferred?
I love poached eggs.
Yeah.
And they have to be just medium. So I don't like when there's any googie bit, as they say. You
know, uncooked albumin, uncooked white is disgusting.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And then, but I don't like the yellow and it's hard. So,
you've got to have that where you almost have a little perimeter of the yolk is cooked, but when you crack into it, the center oozes out, you know what I mean? And you got to think time as well. The time from when you finish cooking to get to the consumer. If you have two eggs, you got to make sure that by the time they get to the second one, it's still, there's still going to be enough time to work with it. It's still going to be runny. I had a Russian guest that used to come to a place I worked in one time, and not all, every Russian, but a lot of them, they'll only drop an egg in the shell. They'll drop it into water for 20 seconds and then they crack in with a pin. They just create a hole and they suck the raw egg out of it. Yeah. But
why?
Disgusting, man. You know what I mean? But at the same time, right, I've always said, if someone's paying the money,
give them what they want.
Give them what they want. I mean, I remember one of the boys.
Never heard that before.
Well, I had never come across it either. And then I had a few different Russian guests staying. And I was like, and it was, you know, these people wouldn't have known each other in different times. I was like, going, Jesus Christ, this is hardcore stuff. I was like, what is even the point of it getting the 20 seconds? Like, what's up with that? Because, I mean, literally, it's raw.
Yeah,
I find that now. As you say, if I bust open an egg or it's a fried egg, and a lot of guys don't flip an egg, and like an over easy egg should still be flipped, right? Or if you're going to have it sunny side up, it's got to go under a sally, under a salamander. Otherwise, you're going to get that film that's over the yolk is going to be raw, and then the top of the white, the albumin, is uncooked. That sends me mental. It sends me mental. I hate the sight of that. I mean, I would get more annoyed with a chef now dishing out an undercooked egg like that.
Some people like them like that, but you know, some people like them.
Yeah, I don't know. Something wrong with them if they do, you know what I mean? For me, I love a fried egg. I love a good egg fried and over medium, just nice, a runny yolk and all the white cooked. No markings, no whatever, no discoloration, no bubbles. So there you go. Next time I'm in the market.
Talk a lot of notes
there.
Get it right.
Get it right. Right, what about you? What's your first one?
I'm going, I was thinking about this in the car coming in, and I was, it's...
No, you weren't.
I was Dover sole I'm going with. And the reason I'm going with Dover sole, I was going to say halibut or turbot, right? So they're a much bigger fish, and they're sometimes called the fillet steak of the ocean. But a Dover sole in the right hands is really beautiful.
Unbelievable.
Delicate. It's just so delicious. Mm. I mean, and as well, if I have someone that I know isn't crazy on eating fish, Dover sole is where, I mean, they're expensive, so
I'm
not getting notions about myself here, but that is the type of fish you can start with because the flavour of them is really subtle.
I saw something recently that I haven't seen in many, many years. I stayed in the K Club and I saw it being done tableside.
Yeah, carry on.
Gloomy.
Yeah.
And you think you stayed there recently?
Yeah, my wife had it when we were there.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I was like, oh my God, I haven't seen that done tableside. Classy.
There's loads of classic recipes for sole, but generally speaking, like, you know in the cartoons when the cat gets the fish and he eats the whole fish a little bit, that's a Dover sole. So if you get a Dover sole and it's cooked perfectly, the four fillets should literally just fall off the bone and you take the skirt off.
Or you could stitch up a waiter, leave it slightly under there isn't a knife or spoon in the world that's going to get the fillet off.
Exactly. You've done that trick as well, have you? But the skin you just pull off, you just put your knife in and then you just pull it off, and then there's a skirt that runs either side and you just run up that with your scissors and take that off.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's like rip. Plaster whenever you get that tough skin off, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just I just think it's a really beautiful thing, and if it's in the right hands, like if the right type of chef has like a really hot pan,
yeah,
and they get lovely caramelization, and then when you take them off the bone, you're left with it silky.
Oh,
it's so delicious.
Yeah, so so meniere and
exactly, you know, our Salmon Fam, Randy.
Yeah, Bonfam, yeah, the old classics that were taught at college. Yeah, brilliant.
And really all they need is like a Dover sole, all it really needs is butter and a little bit of lemon.
Yeah.
I mean, a few papers.
Then, we're in the same hymn sheet there.
Yeah, and look, I would say that if you were ever going to get a real understanding on how to fillet a flat fish, that's the one that you're going to go to. Because
funny, at college, I would love doing the wee competitions, and there was a larder competition that I did one time, and it was lamb and seafood, and you had to present the lamb in whatever way, like a French trimmed rack of lamb. Then the other one was sold four ways, and you know, you get the fillet yeah, as is. Then on papillette, it was the other way, you know, with the salmon mousse or well-wilted spinach or whatever. Then it was just like the little slivers of goujons. And then the last one was on tresse.
All right,
which if you think of French plait and a woman's hair, where you're just plaiting the fish. It's called sole en tresse. And I remember doing that at the time. So anytime Cora like wants a hair, I guess, get over here. I do a Dover sole job in your head. So yeah, unbelievable fish.
Yeah, and I think it's really, now it's not cheap, so I would say if you are going to try it, or if it's something, start off with like a lemon sole or a plaice, because it's the same principle, but they're just not as expensive. But once you master on a lemon sole, which is just a smaller sole really, or a slip sole, then you move up to the Dover, the king.
Yeah.
Normally 700 or 800 grams in weight.
And you need a big pan to cook that bad boy too, don't you? Like, Jesus, it's really, I mean, I'm not a massive fish lover. But as you, I think you might have said something there at the beginning. I don't know what terminology you use, but it's a meaty fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it? Like, it's just, it's not fishy.
And there's no little bones in it. Like, the bones literally stay in one piece. So, like, if you're looking into sea bass or salmon, they have pin bones that need to be taken out with a little tweezer. So, if anybody is a little bit, and that's what people are normally nervous around, it's the bones. But you get four perfect fillets that come off. Anyway, I've waffled on them up about, so I really like it. So, that's my ingredient of the week.
Now I want to eat some. The man, the myth, the legend is here himself. Conor Moore, welcome to Dishing It Out.
All right, all right, all right.
We were wondering who you were going to start with.
All right, now I'm me. Well, what's the crack, lads? How are you?
In our big intro, we had Carlos Sainz coming in.
My name is Carlos Sainz. I'm now the chef for Ferrari.
And then I made a mistake that we had Al Foran in episode one as well. So then we're saying we have the best impersonator. Whoa. You start a fight with the boys.
You've one of the best. One of the best. There you go.
That's what we went with.
Yeah.
Yet another legend. It's great to see you, mate. How's things?
All's great, yeah. All is very, very good at the minute.
Back from the US of A, or have you been there recently?
I've been over and back to the UK a bit, and I kind of have the next couple of weeks to myself.
Yeah.
Usually January is quiet, but it wasn't this year for whatever reason. There were plenty of gigs and stuff like that, but yeah, I just moved into a house, my house, the day before Christmas Eve, which...
Oh, wow.
Where was Christmas dinner?
It was there in my house.
And you only moved in the day before
Christmas? And we never used the oven.
Oh, wow.
No way.
Fresher.
Who's the cook at home?
My wife.
So you were all right. Well, you travel a lot for work, do you?
I do, yeah. Be over and back to the States and the UK. Anywhere, really. Like, it's great like that, but I lived in America for 2 years. And then I came home in 2020 and I wasn't able to get back out to America because of COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So I was doing a show for NBC at the time. And so we had to kind of do the second season. And then subsequently, I was able to get back into America on the third season.
I find it much different when you go to different parts of the States, that like the way you eat is different and the way...
Oh, I eat a lot worse. Yeah, if I'm on the road, I'm a very bad planner. I was really looking at stuff on this today, like... just about planning meals and stuff like that a bit more. Like I'm awful with that, and I'll end up like McDonald's.
You're in good nick anyway, though. I mean, do you have to watch that, or are you just lucky?
I'd have fast metabolism, so I don't have to. But then you put it on where you don't want to see it.
I had fast metabolism at 22, and then I turned into a fat bastard. And I was like, well, I wish I had kept that thought to myself. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what the
fuck? You wished it away.
I used to go to bed, so please just put on a wee bit of weight, be able to start for this team, and then all of a sudden, like, what the? Going on, do you know what I mean? Bring back, where did it go?
Oh, I've been literally reading stuff on that, like building up and what foods to take. Building up, I have like acid reflux and stuff.
Oh, lovely.
So I just did a food intolerance test two weeks ago of the results coming in tomorrow.
Oh, they'll be pushing all sorts at you, man. And it'll be
I know. I don't care. I'm ready to get rid of everything if it like just... Because obviously stop in that. The game I'm in, it's all about my voice.
I was going to say, you don't want to be...
And some days, like, my voice is up and down. So some days, like, I'm doing, like, Matthew McConaughey, for instance, and it's nice and crisp, and it's, well, you see, it's obviously a really beautiful thing to do, you know what I'm saying? It's all right, all right, all right. But there's other times then I'll do that and it'll come out like, oh, it's all right, all right. It'll be like that or something. Or Jurgen Klopp is another one where, for showing this moment, we're really good, you know.
Once you go deep, you're a baller.
Once I go deep, but if I get this kind of, whatever it's called, GERD or acid reflux, and it's all to do with foods. So I like go everything down and I'm after realizing, I'm like, all right, when I stop, it's if I have a gig, I won't eat for 4 hours before a gig. Just to make sure that my voice is good. Like, I remember doing the Late Late and everything, having a sandwich and a coffee about 10 minutes before I was going on.
No bother.
And then I would go on and do my bit, and at the end of it I would just put it down to nerves. I'd always eat and have a drink of coffee before I went to gigs, and then I was like, I just get nervous, so my throat closes up with me a little bit or whatever, and I get this kind of like phlegm, or, and then I just realised it was bloody
well, when you work in our game and you're around, you know, private chateaus or hotels or whatever, and if you ever have singers in opera or different or whatever, and you see them, you know, in the green room or in a private room or a private area, like warming the voice and play. I mean, they take a wee bit more care with the voice, I can tell you. Now, I have seen a few opera singers in particular coming in and they're going through all sorts of mad stuff, like, before they hit the stage.
I also think it's an age thing. I think most people, when they get a little, once you get out of your 20s, then you start toiling into what you're eating. And you do, because then you don't even care. You drink much more than you would when you get a bit older. And I just think it's just part of life. Isn't it, really?
For me, like, I wouldn't even, I'm seeing everybody at the minute. I'm going from doctor to doctor and like homeopaths, everything. Because I actually asked Niall Horan about it. And he was telling, because he's a singer. So he obviously can relate to, because technically what I do, it's a bit like singing. Like, you get up there and you just hit these notes or whatever and certain tones and inflections in your voice. So you're changing it all the time. So like the food now, I've realized, is a big, big part of that. And like, my voice goes on me so much like these days.
Well, you probably put so much strain on your vocal cord as well. Yeah. You probably find it after, like, whenever you do a skit, I mean, because you obviously, you're doing all the voices. Like, what's a typical, say, if you have a 1 minute thing that you might put up online, like, just how much time does it take for you to do all the bits and bobs that you edit it down, or have you got a nail down in 5 or 6 minutes of stuff, or are you at it for an hour?
Oh, if you're doing like 1 minute, like you're talking between shooting it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you got to write it first.
Yeah.
Then you got to shoot it. Then you got to edit it.
Yeah.
You talk like.
But the actual talking part, like the strain on the voice part, or the part, obviously all of that other stuff.
All depending on what I'm doing. If I'm doing multiple people or whatever, but if I'm doing one person, I'll just turn around and like, I thought it was a really good ration. I would draw really well and blah, blah, blah. You do Carlos Sainz.
You get it right.
The last one I did was Carlos, Lewis, Fred, and Charles. It took me about maybe 45 minutes or an hour maybe to just record it, because it's all like one line with each person. So it's just keep doing like, look at that. Oh, that's my line now. Do that line. And then it's piecing it together and then doing it like green screening and sending it out and all that kind of stuff.
Because you obviously need to be fairly adept at the editing as well and all that stuff, or do you have somebody that helps you now?
I do have someone that helps me. The only problem with editing in comedy, even when I work with like big production companies or whatever, editing comedy is so much different to editing anything else. So like,
might lose the moment to be longer or whatever. Where do you lean into new inspiration? Because obviously you have a big bank of people that you do very well, but like, how do you find the next big
I think it's just my nature. I get kind of itchy feet. Like, obviously, I've done golf, Formula One. At the minute now, I'm looking to do, I'm trying to learn off Joe Biden.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The election's coming up.
I'll forget that. Honestly.
And I'd like to, hey, come on, man, come on. Hey.
And I like.
No. Do you know, because obviously the election's coming up and it'd be deadly, because I kind of think it'd be just gas crack to have him and Trump calling each other on the off.
Yeah.
Just a bit of slagging going on or something like that.
You're
going
to get a lot of love out of that. Al Gore's here. Like, let's play Trump.
I'm trying to hedge my bets by doing Biden and Trump. So whoever wins.
Yeah.
But kind of stuff like that motivates me. So I like to always have like sort of a new goal or something. But sometimes it might motivate me like, like next year, maybe I'll just go back and look at soccer again and go, all right, who are the new people I want to do? Or maybe I can get better at a few of these.
But so golf, I mean, was golf the first big sporting thing that you went into? Like, obviously, Tiger was your big break with that.
Where, I mean, even go before that, even where did it all? How did you figure out that you were good at impressions?
So when I was a kid, I was doing them a good bit.
Right.
And I was in school, and I would do a couple of my mates. My uncle, like down in my GA club, he was. He kind of talks like that. He's got his nose broken a couple of times. You know, tough cornerback, and he'd be there saying something, he'd leave the room or whatever. I'd be like,
laughing. Straight in.
And it was weird. Then one Christmas, everyone's like, do Ned, just show Ned. Like, and I was like, what? And he's like, what? What do you mean me? You know, this is before I was ever doing it. But then I just started off doing GA, where there was a bit of a row in a match. I did a video on it, and the boys all thought this was hilarious. When I look back at it now, it's actually terrible.
Right.
But like, to the standard that you have things at now. Yeah. But it was like, Snapchat were after coming out with this app, face swap thing, and I put one out, Jed, like about the championship, and I had Harry Redknapp. I was, what was your fed chesty, trippy. Beckham was one that I was doing back then. Yeah, you know, I thought, for me, Kerry, they've gone, wouldn't it? You know, Victoria thinks Dublin, but I think Kerry, yeah. So I threw this out and got a phone call from Joe.ie. So I started with them. Now, I didn't get the job initially. They brought me up, and then they were like, let's see your stuff. And I was like, that's me stuff. That's all I have. Like, they're like, they gave me about 2 weeks, and they were like, come back to us in 2 weeks with, like, they wanted to see Premier League stuff.
Yeah.
I could do Mourinho. I always was, I'm the special one, very special. I think so. But I was able to do him, but I didn't have many dealers. But I remember doing Klopp. I remember at that time trying to do Rory McIlroy, and I remember just being awful at them. But after the 2 weeks, then I was like, they've got better, like, and if you keep working at them, they actually get better. So that kind of made me.
But you have to have a knack for it. Like,
well, some sort of knack. Yeah, I obviously have
a
knack.
You must almost have an open line for all of them, do you? Like,
yeah, you find a little thing.
It's difficult to just go from being Connor kicking into Klopp or kicking into Redknapp. So, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
when I'm starting off to do someone, I'll need to, like with Tiger, I'd always start, well, the conditions were really tough out there. They were really tough.
That's what I mean.
And yeah, and but now I could start anything off as Tiger. I've done them so many times, because the people you do most, then you just get so...
Memory.
Exactly. It's like muscle memory in your brain.
Do you have to do it in a mirror? Because you have the mannerisms like...
Yeah. So I'll do a lot of stuff on my phone.
Okay.
I'll record at my phone and record like looking at the phone, and I'll do it kind of that way. But in terms of, I started with Joe, and then kind of what happened, the biggest one I had was that kind of set me off in the UK. I got a couple of million views on a video where I put Klopp, Wenger, Mourinho in a car, and we're driving along, and it was just like, it was Wenger's car. Oh no, Mourinho picks up Wenger because his car is broke down, and he's like, I'm at the point, well, I put a lot of bad petrol in and whatever. It was kind of like all these like play with words into what he's done. And Klopp then asked him to stop off at Southampton. He was going to buy something. this was 2017.
After you bought Manny.
Yeah. And then Mourinho's like, I cannot believe the car breaks down and I'm after paying 90 million for this car. And you come out and the reg is Pogba.
Yeah.
And I remember when I did the video, I was like, I don't know if it, again, you know, you were saying about the critic thing.
Yeah.
I was like, it's a bit painful. It's a bit
crazy. Yeah.
I don't know if it's any good. It goes on the internet, like 1.something million views.
Well.
And then that gave me like good confidence then, like just for doing videos in the UK. But before that, like Gerlach Nan doing the GA stuff and Brolly, they were keeping me going on that front. So I always was doing that here. And
I think I heard you saying recently that your Gerlach Nan is also some other character you said is very, very close to Yeller.
Well, you see, when you're doing Loch Nan, you do that, right? But when you go over to America, you turn it into Gary Player, you know? And that's what you're going to do. You're going to hit the ball and that's it. I'm the greatest player that's ever lived.
But a lot of them are like that, where they're just, you know, even...
Tones are similar, tones.
Like, struggling with Biden, right? And... he's incredibly hard to do. Like,
really?
Incredibly, yeah.
He's got a right husky voice.
It's weird, you know, years ago, you know, and it was kind of like that, and then all of a sudden,
hey, you mean all of this, you know, that's what we're going to do, the United States of America.
He's kind of real husky and stuff, but I was doing Tommy Tiernan one day, and Tommy's like, yeah, you know. No, I was doing Biden, and then I was like, trying to do it. Well, I wasn't getting, and then I started doing Tommy, and Tommy is a bit like that,
and I was like, you turn that into American and you know what you're talking about?
Well, sort of like you'd mad Tommy and then you've calm Tommy and everything. But another one that like I found like that was I was doing, I was trying to do Justin Rose and I couldn't get him. back Rosie's after winning the Olympic medal and stuff like that, and Europe won the 2018 Ryder Cup.
He's a polished character.
So I was trying to get Rosie and I couldn't, and I just gave up on him then. And then I was up in the room one day and I was doing Roy Hodgson, and it was during the World Cup, was it 2018 or something?
Or
the Euros maybe or something.
Yeah, it was a very, very good day, and I was very excited to be the manager of England. It was quite whoever, and I was doing this
into the camera. My brother walks by and he goes, "You nailed Rosie, did you?"
Yeah.
I was like,
"Justin Rose without the lisp."
I was like, "What?" And I was actually annoyed. I was like, "That was doing Roy Hodgson. You don't."
Yeah,
that
yeah.
So I was focusing for the first few minutes on why do you think that doesn't sound like Roy Hodgson? What's wrong with that? And then he left or whatever. And then I was like, "Oh, maybe." And all of a sudden, I didn't have it perfect. But then I had somewhere to start. I was starting from the wrong place.
Yeah.
So I started Roy Hodgson. Then
you know, well, he's a very, very good player, and you know, I won the Olympics, and it's very good. You know, and you kind of find it like that. So
in terms of like the big break with the golf. The big break I got really was, it was NBC. As soon as I did one video, apparently the head of NBC was in Augusta and he meets the head of the Golf Channel. He's like, "Hey, did you see this video of this kid?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, I saw it earlier." He goes, "You should hire him."
And that's it. It's that easy.
He's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah." And then the next day they met and he goes, "Did you hire him?" And he goes, oh, you want to hire him? I said, "Hire him." Mm. And I get a phone call then pretty much that evening, and it's like, I'm on the way over to America a couple of weeks later and I'm working for the Golf Channel. But how I got, like, I remember I was on a podcast one and they were like, I was in America, so you manifested all this. And I was like, I don't think so. I was like,
what's that mean?
They're like, "Oh, you did, but you don't know you did." Yeah. I was like, okay. I was just at home doing videos and stuff. And, you know, so I start doing the golf and there's a fella from Bridgestone. I did the video for the European Ryder Cup team. Thomas Bjorn liked the impressions and that's he said, great. "Will you do a video for the Ryder Cup team?" And I was like, "Yeah, but I can only do like six players and I'll do you, but that's it." Like, because it's only 2 weeks out. And he goes, it wasn't actually him that said it. It was someone from the European Tour. They were like, no, you have to do all 12 or you're doing zero. We're not going to go in with a video and go, "Well, these are the important." You know, and I could then, I was like, So I was like, I just got up early. I don't know, like five. I remember that time. I would get up around five every morning and just listen to those six fellas for 2 weeks. Went over, shot the video. The video got played anyway. And when I went over to the Ryder Cup in Paris then, I was sitting doing an interview with Cara Banks at the Golf Channel. And lo and behold, some guy in America is sitting there in his boxer shorts just after getting up. And he works for Bridgestone Golf. And he's like, "I know that guy." He's looking at me on the TV. And he was telling me this himself. And he's like, "I know that guy." And he's like, "That's the impersonator. They're taking this guy seriously." And he rings the head of Bridgestone, Dan Murphy. And he's like, "You know this guy that does, remember I showed you the Tiger impression? Like, he's on the Golf Channel now." And he's like, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, we should get him to do something with Tiger." Yeah. And that was it.
Do you want to keep that manifesting up, man? It's working for you.
He said, "Say, what was it not like that day? Hey, waiting for him to show up." I mean, you know, we get to meet a lot of famous people in our walks of life as well. You know, some of you know, it's neither here nor there to you, like celebrities, whatever. But every now and again, you know, we love the world of sports. So in particular, when you're looking after a team, he's a big Liverpool fan. I think you might be too. And he's had the team stay. But like I'd say that morning we were like going, "Jesus, it's one thing meeting them, but it's actually working with them." It must have just been unbelievable, man, you know?
It was. And this is testament to him as a person. Like, so when I went in, I met him. He started talking to me about all these other impersonations that I was doing and stuff. So he'd looked at my stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a weird way.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure he's not at home every night.
It was a nice week confidence booster.
And maybe the night before, he's like looking, "All right, you know," and he's like, I'm going to work with this guy all day tomorrow. So like, he's even asked me to tell you, I did Gerlach Nan with Gerlach Nan. He was like, "Who? You did a video with a guy with a condom on your head?" It was really funny, man. Yeah. And that was like Loch Nan.
Yeah. Because that's
Claire.
Funny even if you don't know the character, isn't it?
Yeah, like, you know, the crowd are laughing. Yeah. Like, laughs is infectious. So he was like, "Dude, that was funny, man." And he was even like, "Oh man, you're Conor McGregor? That's really good. Do McGregor." And I was like, "What? So shut your face, Tiger, or slap the head off you." You know what I'm saying? And he was loving this. So like, he made me feel very comfortable. So in a weird way, I was going in, obviously, this big fan of him. And then he's talking to me and I'm like, just he really likes what I do in a sense.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise you, but when you hear somebody that's the top of their game at anything, they're always well-versed.
It's always
like
the superstar that's nice.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Giving you a helping hand with your food frustrations.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
There, like, growing up, is there like big memories around food, or is it really just something that...
Very traditional, like Thursdays we had the stew.
Right.
Friday, fish and chips, or not fish and chips.
It's gas.
Chicken nuggets, or chicken fingers and chips or something.
We all have a day, man. Like,
yeah,
man,
yeah.
We had a day, like, you know, Wednesday was soup and spuds or whatever. Friday was fish, Thursday was crispy pancakes.
Did you still do chops?
Yeah.
Chops in the freezer. That's all I remember. And Sunday, then you had your Sunday, and then Saturday it was like chips, beans, and sausages or something.
Gladiators and a wee lock or whatever.
Yeah. It's weird how everyone, and like, you'd wonder, is it going to be the same for our generation? Are we going to do
the same thing? I think there's too many channels.
I remember my dad telling me a story about trying to get olive oil. He'd come home from the Rathabane. He worked at the front of the house, but he worked in the business. And he was trying to make a bolognese or something. And he was like, I'll go and get some olive oil. And he went up to the shops, to Dunn's or wherever, the supermarket.
What's
was
that? Going.
Do you know where you got it?
Where?
In a chemist. You get olive oil in Ireland in a chemist. It came in a small brown bottle.
Unbelievable.
And the pharmacy used to give it to you to put it in your hair. And my outfit went up and got away at home. Little bit of olive oil. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, everyone's...
Your mammy did the cooking growing up, and it was one of them houses, or that the old man.
Yeah, sometimes he'd chip in. Sometimes he'd do a Saturday and Sunday and stuff like that. But during the week, it was always my mum. And now, like, because I've moved into, I keep saying my wife's always like, you never do any cooking and blah blah blah. I'm like, wait till I get my own kitchen.
It's
now the pressure's on me. Like, I've said it now, and it's like,
and do you have a couple of dishes up a sleeve, like, or do you muck around in the kitchen or not at all?
I don't really muck around, even with food. When I go to a restaurant, I'm a bit like a child in a sense, where I just keep getting the same thing. If I go to a Chinese, I'm getting the same Chinese, an Indian, same Indian. If I go to certain,
I do that.
I just won't take a risk.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, this food intolerance thing is scaring me now, because I'm like, but...
Have you any favourites in the city here?
In the city?
Or maybe you're not even living in Dublin, are you?
I'm down in Mullingar now.
Yeah.
I love Oscar's in the middle of Mullingar. It's a lovely restaurant. Their takeaways are delicious. Yeah. So that's kind of my go-to place.
Yeah, it's busy. Busy place.
Oh,
yeah.
It's always busy.
Yeah, it's mental.
We were just in it last week, and there was... walking through the town, there's tumbleweed going through the town, like, no one opened the door, and it's just like this
wedged
hive of activity.
They haven't changed the menu, I think, in 20 something years, and it's just absolutely pumping. And then they're pumping out 3-4 times what you can see on takeaway. Probably one of those places that had adapted to the takeaway eat at home model long before everybody kind of had to tap into it.
Oh yeah, because I never used to, I was always a Chinese or a chipper man and stuff, and then it was like during COVID just started getting that, and it was they just do like this lovely chicken Oscar style, just nice and simple. It's just
sure. Once you like it,
Adders, and they're just it's really, really nice. And so that's kind of my go-to place at home in Dublin.
Like, have you a fine palate, or you don't really care? Like, you don't get too hung up on where you're eating out, or like special occasion spots or whatever.
Yeah, not much of a foodie. I did chapter one.
Yeah.
There, about 18 months ago.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I made a bollocks of the whole thing. My wife absolutely loved it. And then I had a load of drink the night before. So I rocked up and I was a bit like sick. Do you know what I mean? Now, it was still all delicious and it was amazing and everything else. But like, I definitely like, do you know when your stomach is not great? And I want to go back and just do it in my A game. Like, because like, and it was still lovely and everything else. But like, my wife like just raved and raved about it. Like, while I was just like,
get me out of here.
I was just like that. You know, when you're just after drinking too much the night before. Yeah. And I was like, I was really annoyed at myself after that, because she was just raving about it. And I was like, I just had a nice stomach there. I'd be able to.
So one of the questions we ask is, do you ever have a memorable meal? That's like really stuck. It doesn't have to be in a fine dining restaurant. Or is there any time in your life where you were out for something to eat, or maybe it was a Christmas dinner, I don't know what it was, and you just like, it always sticks in your mind? Or
a real memorable meal,
and if you have to think that long,
I did had a very memorable, I just can't remember the restaurant we were in, but years ago, David Beckham walked in.
No way.
And that's why I just remember the place so vividly. And it was an expensive enough place in London. And I remember my uncle was going mad about the price of the burger. We're all over from Ireland. But that place, it was like, I don't know what it was called. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
I shouldn't know. But that's the most memorable.
Did you know him at the time? Like, were you doing impressions?
Jesus, no, I was a child.
Yeah.
Right,
back
okay.
When Beckham was Beckham.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Beckham
yeah.
was Becks, yeah.
Did the documentary about him.
Amazing. Did you well, watch actually, I've only...
So nostalgic.
I don't watch a lot of stuff with my wife anymore. Like, I go out to the office and that's why our marriage is strong. She watches her stuff. She doesn't have to watch cops, robbers, FBI, shoot 'em ups all the time now. But the Beckham one, I watched half the first episode and I says, look, Nettie, I found one. We're going to watch this together. I says, this is going to be good. I'll crack. And we'd watch one episode and maybe a bit of episode two. And then I went back to the chateau and we just haven't picked up where we left off. So I do need to finish it. But you chat about memory lane, man. I remember
I
some
never
of those games.
Got such a deal in England by the fans.
Oh, man. It
they
was,
really
oh, no.
gave him a blade in the
it
hard
was,
time.
It was oh. bad. It was
do you know what, though? He's lucky. It was in the 90s because, like, if that was social media now and you pick up your phone, you can't escape it. And the one thing that, like, irks me about, like, football nowadays and the same in the GAA is that the players are not allowed to become personalities. Yeah. You're not allowed to be an individual anymore. It's all about the
Which
team.
Is a shame, it
doesn't
and,
work
like,
for you if you're trying to.
No, exactly. And people are like, oh, what players do you do? I'm like, none. Yeah. Like, who talks?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
people
yeah.
are only interested yeah. in it.
That's
if
a
I start
great
doing.
Point.
Like, I remember I Bernard Brogan was, like, the last kind of.
Yeah.
Individual yeah. sort of where it was like Brand yeah. Burno and stuff and you could do and people I would do I still do GA gigs and stuff they love a bit of Burno because
Brawley.
Burno was a character you know the up in the hill you know what I mean yeah you know what I mean he was kind of he was like the Beckham and all but and everyone loved doing it and then all of a sudden then even with him like it was kicked out with him it's like hey you're getting endorsement money now you're going to split it with the team and you know what I mean anymore you're going to tackle and you're going to do this you're going to become a cog in the wheel you're still obviously like a good player and stuff but that don't want to see you celebrating don't want to see you do this do that yeah. and then it to be fair it works
yeah.
that's the thing so this is it's pretty intelligent right. people telling them to do this but they're now like where's the individuals
yeah.
in GA the only individual like in a sense where people like want to go see is Clifford and it's just because he's so bloody good.
Yeah. But the one at the weekend, Thomas Müller, he was all in German, but you didn't need to be able to speak German to realize he was having a mental breakdown about Bayern's performance. And it's gone viral. If you haven't seen it yet, it's gonna pop up on your feed at some point today or tomorrow. But he's interviewed in German. I can't wait for it to appear with English subtitles because Thomas Müller just rolls back the years. He's having you can clearly see he's gone on and somebody says like this is what passion really looks like for your
club. Yeah, and I just think, like, whether it be soccer or GA or a lot of stuff, like, it's like, all right, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to talk to the media because you might yeah. give them something and you're going to affect the whole team. So it's so bloody hard then to get characters, for me, like, to find out, all right, who's, like, funny, who's a laugh.
And you have to just
but you know what?
Yeah, yeah, I swear to God, I was into the boys, yeah. we were chatting about it and we were like there's where, boys, you could say what you want. But individual sports is like that because Formula One is like that where you're interviewed, the microphone's put in front of you as soon as you get out of the car. So you got to talk, you know what I mean? And nowadays, like, I just think, like, team sports are, like, just so sanitized.
Well, there's a skill yeah. for you where you do 6 or 7 players and you just sound the same line. All sound the same.
But you can only do it once.
Six
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
You can't. Yeah,
six
you,
different characters in every one of them: Spanish, German, Italian.
Yeah,
Indian party line, foreign.
I do wonder will Italian. It come back because I do think like, while listen, it does work.
Yeah.
That's why teams are successful because they've. Yeah. Hey, all right.
You know,
no more of this.
Is probably the last of the managers that's like that. He's just finished, or I don't know. He's not really retired. He'll come back to see if some championship club probably. Barry was brilliant because he was. Honest and worse.
Well, managers, because they're, you get them when they're pissed off, you get them when they're happy and stuff.
Yeah.
So you can drag them in and they might say something. But like, yeah, but like people always ask me about players that I do and it's like, I don't really do many
yeah.
players. Even in soccer, it's the same thing. It's like, there's not many players to do because like they're told, hey, you better not say anything.
Yeah.
You say something, you're in trouble. You know, just start doing Harry Kane in German.
I need five, you know, and that's it. So yeah, let's go. Whatever. What's let's go in German?
Well, listen, Connor, thanks a million for coming in. It means a lot taking time out of a busy schedule to come into us two boys. And best of luck in your new home.
That's cheers.
Your lovely wife and
really nice
and happy cooking in there.
Cheers, boys.
Okay, so next up, we've got our culinary conundrum. So Ed Chef is in the building.
Oh,
what have we got, Ed?
It'll never not.
The man.
Fill me with a thrill.
The legend.
Hello, Gareth and Gary. I'm always interested which name they start with, but Gareth, you got the first top billing here. Long-time listener, first-time questioner. In an effort to save some cash, I'm starting to batch cook my work lunch, but have grown bored already of veg soup and brown bread. Have you any tips or recipes for a handy and tasty lunch that I can prep for the week on Sunday? Cheers, Philip in Enniscorthy.
Oh, for the week? Oh, I don't know about the week, but I mean, maybe I'll break it up into one or two, whatever, because I watch in awe as my wife, who eats so well, and she's a school teacher, so I suppose she never liked sandwiches or whatever. So she started doing these waffles. I bought this waffle iron a couple of years ago for the kids just to change up the Saturday morning treat or whatever it be. Like, I tend to do, like, whatever they want. Egg whites and bacon is one, or pancakes on Saturday or Sunday. But this waffle machine, I don't know, I bought it online and it's excellent. And so she just has some different protein powders. There's one in Limerick, a friend of hers, it's Just Be or something got there. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
That's it.
We know the girl. Is it? Yeah. I know the packet because we know her. And so Annette just makes, you know, Google a waffle recipe, very, very similar really to like a pancake recipe. And, you know, there's bacon powder and whatever in there. You know, if you're not getting a bit of height in them, add a wee bit more bacon powder, let it rest before. Yeah. Just a wee tip, regardless of the recipe, make sure that there's bacon powder in there because it will help get a rise into the waffle. And it'll make sense once you make one or two. And she does a little blueberry compote, which just uses frozen blueberries, tiny bit of sugar straight from the freezer, and just sort of cooks them down. I mean, I would do a whole compote, but she's literally taking blueberries into a pan with a wee bit of sugar and just cooking them down, putting them into little like Tupperware containers and taking that to school. Or I think, again, she has like a wee bit of yogurt or something that she dabbles, so she keeps that in the fridge at work. So just a little chocolate protein waffle, and it gets her through the day.
Sounds
yeah, and they look really, really lovely, you know what I mean? And something different. Cook it, leave it out to cool. Once it's completely cool, put it into an airtight Tupperware container, chuck it in the fridge, and then it won't steam up on itself. So you make sure it's cool before you... And she makes them the night before, has a batch that she makes, and then pours it in every night. So the mix is already done. Makes a fresh one every night. Does the batch those 2 or 3 days. And then maybe for the last day, you know, you could do something else or maybe eat at lunch out one day a week.
The trick is not to have the same thing for 5 days in a row.
Yeah, like that's what I was going
to
say.
The inclination is to batch for 5 days.
No.
If you're, by Thursday, you're gone.
Yeah, you can't do that. No matter how nice. That's why I said 3 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's do something like that there. And then maybe for the other days. You know, I love granola. I like, you know, a really oaty, crunchy.
We gave the granola recipe.
And we did that last week or the week before. If you go back on the episodes, you'll come across it. I think that's a really, I know that people associate that with, like, with breakfast or whatever it'll be, but even if it's a little lunch snack to get the hunger over, but what I'm going with.
I'll jump in with a couple of savoury things. So we eat quite a lot of chicken at home, and the kids love chicken. So rather than just, most people will, you know, put them into an air fryer or grill them underneath the grill, I would say a very little basic tandoori marinade.
Oh.
So all you need is yogurt, lemon juice, a little bit of garlic, and then some spices. So if you have a little spice tin, lean into more of the red spices. So paprika, smoked paprika, a little bit of cayenne, and then your curry powder. Mix it all together. Marinate chicken legs or chicken thighs for about a half an hour. Preheat your grill or your salamander, as we'd say, and then just put your tandoori chicken underneath the grill and salamander. And then, you know, a packet of that pre-cooked chicken, I think it's about £4 or £5 in the supermarket, and you won't even get you probably get 250, 300 grams, where if you buy 4 chicken breasts, it's going to cost you £7 or £8. Mm. Marinate it like that. And then one day it can go into a sandwich, another day it can go into a salad, another day you throw it onto a wrap.
So it's versatile, yeah.
Yeah, if there's a panini press in your kitchen and work, then you just bring your wrap in. And then at the same time that you're cooking that chicken, I would say keep an eye out for the little small lines of bacon. They're like, it'll be like less than a kilo. And then all you're doing with that is just throw it into a pot of water, bring it up to a simmer, for about an hour, a very simple honey glaze, and then pop it into the oven to glaze it up as well. And I promise you, that hour's work that you do, like you just now, you haven't bought any packet of ham and you haven't bought any of that packet of chicken or whatever, and you've the food for the whole week. If you're doing a roast on a Sunday, then just, if you're roasting a chicken, just roast up a little bit of ham as well. And then you've got your whole week's worth of sandwiches ready to go. Brilliant. If that's what you have. I mean, Gary's giving you a couple of lovely sweet options there. And I do think those protein powders are a good idea. I know people might think, what are chef's opinions on that? Protein or protein powder, normally it's whey, which is just a byproduct of milk production. So if you actually understand what's going on there, all you're doing is just trying to get a bit more protein into your diet.
Mm.
And especially, I mean, I have a couple of kids that at home. My son is 15 and my daughter's, or 16 is he, and my daughter's 13. They play a lot of sports, so I'm conscious of about how much calories to get in for them. So absolutely no problem throwing a scoop of protein into a milkshake with them on, when they're on their way out or when they're finished training.
Protein stops the snacking because it gives the longevity of the, you know, the appetite.
It takes over, like it fills the gap for the hunger. But they're really good ideas. And then I'd also say, just be mindful if you are bringing proteins into work, chicken or ham, or even if it's salmon or whatever, they have to go into the fridge. I think some people think, oh yeah,
you have to go straight in.
Yeah, well, 2 hours is the general rule. Like, I mean, cooked meats have to be getting back under 5 degrees within 2 hours. So really, you should be thinking about that from when it's cooked. Then you chill it down, you get it into the fridge. And when you go into work, just throw it into the fridge. Most people, I think, have access to a fridge.
Brilliant. And best of luck with that, Philip. Dear Gareth and Gary, Gareth again, top billing. Absolutely loving the pod. Congrats to you both. My daughter has become a vegan recently, and I'm struggling to cook anything varied.
Gary's face. Or off that dog camera. Was it as bad as my face? Oh, look, both of us wince.
No, how do you describe it? It dropped into a kind of a very aggressive snarl. I'm struggling to cook anything varied or exciting for her. Can you help? Gareth, maybe I'll direct this one to you.
Cook her a fillet of beef.
Can you help with any recipes or cookbooks to check out? Many thanks, Deirdre O'Neill in Charleville.
I didn't hear the question. Gareth, after vegan.
Gareth, you step in here.
So it's good.
I don't understand the question.
Yeah. So look, to me, in the last 2 years, I would say, I've seen the rise of veganism. And I don't know whether I've seen it, whether it's here to stay, but I think we all should really think about eating more fruits and pulses and vegetables in our diet as a general rule. I remember it's 4 or 5 years ago now, I was looking after a professional sports team, a ladies football team, and I was talking to the nutritionist and she told me that the team was flexitarian. And it was the first time I'd heard that expression.
That?
Oh, you asked exactly the same question. So if flexitarian is somebody that eats, if they're in Ireland, they'll eat beef because the quality of the beef is so good. So they'll flex their diet to where they are. They generally practice vegetarian like 80% of the time. But if they're in somewhere where they know that the protein is going to be super high quality, they'll avail of that quality.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I think it's a smart approach.
Next time I'm in a strip club, I'm just going to say, I'm a flexitarian. Where are my girls?
I like the piece says the next time.
I'm a flexitarian. I'm allowed in here.
Anyway.
Your Honour.
To answer your question, I would say it's much easier nowadays to be vegan. I would say I have friends that are vegans, but 10 years ago you could get nothing. So you've obviously got all the different milk varieties. You've got all the spread varieties. I would say spice and herbs are your friend. The one thing that can be tricky at times is that you don't have butter or fat to lean into. So like trying to lift the flavour and whatever you're doing. I shared a dal recipe.
Very early in the series, yeah.
Which are lentils that are cooked with spice is probably one of the most delicious things that you'll eat. And I would say if you weren't vegan or you didn't know anything about it and somebody served that to you, you're not going to miss the protein anyway. So I would say, and then also leaning into different vegetables. And it, like this time of year now, we spoke about it here. I think it made the hero things like celeriac and these wonderful creamy vegetables will get you that texture. And then understanding the different times of milk. So instead of adding cream, you can always add in, you know, almond milk or oat milk or whatever these things. And that'll get you that creamy texture that's sometimes missing. In the hotel, in the restaurant and the bar actually, as one of the standards that we work to, we have to have a vegan start or a vegan main course and a vegan dessert as part of being a leading hotel of the world. So our pastry chef, Sebastian, does this amazing panna cotta that he makes with coconut milk.
Yeah.
And you would not know that there's no cream in this. He sets it with corn flour rather than
gelatin.
Yeah, gelatin. Yeah.
Have you noticed an uptick in people asking for vegan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a big... And look, I cook in Paris and in France, and they're the... they're going down with the ship, I can tell you now. Like, whenever I go over, like, a few, I mean, I'm over and back and off a lot, but at the beginning of a season or two or three times during the year, I'll drive over or we'll ship some stuff. Like, so I would buy an awful lot of ingredients here and send it over to Paris because you just can't buy it. Like, they just don't want to know about it. They don't want to hear about it. But Gareth is right. The amount of people eating vegan and vegetarian, I mean, vegetarian cooking is really exciting. Actually, it can be. It can be really diverse, really brilliant. And I think it's lovely when a vegetable becomes a star of the show, even if it's for a lot of people a day, a week, whatever it be. And look, chefs have, you know, we're joking there at the beginning of it, simply because, you know, we may not, or I certainly wouldn't have the same range of being a, you know, a vegan chef or turning to vegan recipes to the same level where 30 years of a career has been immersed in everything else. But if I was to tell you that it's not something that I've spent a lot of time on and energy on to make sure that anybody and everybody coming, whether it's the Chateau or whether it's the restaurants that I've worked in over the last while, I'd be a liar, because, I mean, I focus on vegans easily to the same extent as any guest. Their money is the same as anybody else's. Variety is the king. Access to what you can cook with, access to what you can use. And I can tell you now, with experience of a lot of years cooking in France, it is not easy to find all the different milks and all the different faux meats and different whatever.
That I'm not into any of that. Though.
No, well, the faux stuff, I'm like you know, I hate it. You know, one dish I really love, actually, that's, say, in Ireland now, and like an everyday ingredients, whatever. I mean, I would have talked about a simple little sauce provençal like a while ago. So basically, if you think about the base ragu for a lasagna, and I do this celeriac lasagna. Gareth just mentioned celeriac there because it's a really meaty vegetable and packs a really unique flavor. Chefs love working with it. It almost replaces a potato in many ways if you think about it. So I just top and tail a celeriac, peel in with a knife down around the sides, just following the membrane, and then really, really carefully, I slice one little side so I can tip it up on its side. It doesn't rock over and back. And then I get really thin layers where I slice down the celeriac. And if you envisage, I'm going to replace lasagna sheets with celeriac sheets. So it needs to be quite thin. And then I poach them, simmer them in a seasoned stock with salt, pepper, bay leaf, and cook them out until they're just about cooked. And then I make a ratatouille. So onion, garlic, peppers, aubergine, courgettes, all diced up lovely and neat and tidy. Start sautéing those in olive oil, salt, pepper, a little bit of fresh thyme, and then deglaze with wine, and then add in your tinned tomatoes or a ideally what I do is I make a Provençal sauce separate. So I give it about an hour of plopping. So basically, you know, garlic, shallots, thyme, wine, reduced, 400 gram tin of tomatoes, added, reduced, and then a little bit of tomato paste near the end. And I would cook that for an hour, so it gets the benefit of cooking out over time, which you can't really do when the veg is in it because you want to keep them al dente. Then you feed in this Provençal sauce to your sautéed vegetables where they're still al dente, they still have a bite. You fold in the Provençal, and then celeriac is ready and you get a large cutter, like a really large scone cutter or keg mold, and then you cut through the celeriac so that your outside rim is really definite and neat, and then you just layer the celeriac and the ratatouille of vegetables. Finish that then with a nice little pesto, basil, and obviously finish also the ratatouille with fresh basil, and then you're going to make a little pesto that you're going to have coming off the top, and then a little bit of rocket leaves or rucola or arugula, as they say in America, olive oil, black pepper, lemon juice, and just stack that up on top of the lasagna. It's a beautiful little vegan lasagna, I suppose, in a way.
That sounds amazing. Great stuff.
You won't be making it in a hurry.
No, but it sounds like it's worth the wait. Yeah. Final question for this week is, hi, Gareth and Gary, what's the best method for cooking a burger indoors at home without a grill? I live in an apartment, so there's no option to barbecue. Also, any advice on how I can liven up my burger ingredients-wise?
I'll give you how to cook it, and Gary will give you a few ideas how to liven it up. So the best way to cook a burger at home if you've no griddle pan, is a smash burger, they call it. So try and buy yourself one of those weights. They're not that expensive. You can buy them on Amazon. So it's basically a cast iron, little bit bigger than the shape of a burger, and has a little handle on the back of it. And all you're going to do is a non-stick pan, drizzle a small little bit of oil into the pan, and then you put you're going to roll your burger up. So if you're doing a quarter pounder, I'd say, so you've got about 200, 220 grams of mince, seasoned up, you've made your burger mince, roll it into a ball, put it into the pan, put a piece of parchment paper, and then you're going to just push it down with a weight, and it'll smash, it'll go really flat and really round. So what that's going to do is it's going to let the edge of the burger caramelize rather than trying to cook it, roll it into a patty, and then trying to get that kind of caramelization into the burger takes too long that way. So if you make the surface area bigger by smashing it out, you'll see it's a techniques that used in all the diners in America. Now that I've said it to you, anytime you've seen
I can see it in my head now.
Yeah. They just smash them down, and then what they do is they just quickly flip them over, they throw some onion and some cheese on them, throw a splash of water into the pan, put the lid on, and that steams for the last little bit and onto a burger bun. And it's absolutely cracking.
Delicious.
Yeah, and I'll give you a quick little compote that's absolutely top drawer on a burger, right? It's a red onion and mustard seed compote that I call it, okay? And I'll also finish it with a Crozier Blue or a blue cheese gratin, right? Blue cheese and beef or a beef burger. It's a game changer, okay? So start with a little pot. You just slice up 3 or 4 red onions, okay? Oil in the pot, little drizzle, get it hot. Onions in. Sweat those. That means to cook without color. So you keep moving with a wooden spoon or a spatula the onions, medium heat, sizzling all the time, but not coloring the onions. Salt, white pepper, onion starts to soften a little bit. Okay. Now you're going to add in yellow mustard seeds, and you'll buy them in a tiny little jar, the same kind of jar that you'll buy peppercorns or smoked paprika, whatever it'll be. Pour in about a quarter of the jar, right? Leave them in, mix them in. As they start to heat, then you're going to see the odd one pop up in the air. Once they start popping up in the air, a la popcorn style, right? Then add in a decent, say about 50 mils of red wine vinegar. And the minute you add the red wine vinegar, you're going to see the red onion come to life. You're going to see the color of the red onion just pop right away. Now in with about 3 tablespoons of Worcester sauce, okay? Whisk that in again. Then about 6 tablespoons of Heinz ketchup. Must be Heinz.
Really?
So the reason I don't say put any sugar, once you use vinegar on something, you've now got to balance the acidity with sweetness, okay?
Right.
So what you're going to do is put in the 6 tablespoons of Heinz ketchup, mix that up, turn the heat down low now, and just let that plop away for about 20 minutes, okay? Your smash burger's cooked, comes out of the pan, sit it on a little paper towel for a second, onto your brioche bun or your preferred bread, whatever you want to add with it, put on your compote, and then I would go 50% blue cheese and 50% Philadelphia, a tiny wee bit of white pepper, no salt. So you whip up the Philadelphia and the blue cheese, Crozier Blue I use, or Cashel Blue. Then you spoon that over the compote under the salamander or under the grill for about 20, 25 seconds so that it starts to soften. Because once you incorporate heat into cheese, the flavor blows up. And then you cap your burger, and then you can add, you know, lettuce, tomato, onion, whatever you want. But a red onion mustard seed compote and Crozier Blue gratin, unbelievable.
Apologies to our vegan listeners. Our listener in the second question. We've just followed up with the most incredible meat.
Balance has been restored.
Yeah. We're okay now again. Lads, thank you so much. And again, if you want to get your questions in for Gary and Gareth, it's food@goloudnow.com.
Okay, guys, so another brilliant guest with Connor.
Yeah, good really guy.
It's a mad way to just jump into character. And I always said it a few weeks ago as well, but he literally is able to just switch.
It's the mannerism in the face.
Even if you didn't get the character he was doing by what he was saying, like, he actually nearly looks like the person.
Yeah.
David Beckham is unbelievable.
Yeah, like, that's, you know, getting a first ad or TV ad with Tiger Woods is a fairly decent endorsement of your credentials, isn't it?
Yeah, look, come here. It's evident that he's at the top of his game. So, look, thanks very much, Connor, for joining us, and hope you've enjoyed that podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.